Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas, gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, now by nature, I am not political. I think both parties should be taken out and horsewhipped. But I'm a firm believer in justice. I've seen enough injustice in my time. And when the alleged judge can change the rules as he sees fit, that's not justice. That's why I call it the clown show. Now, we're talking about the bizarre, unsolved mysteries on this show. And some of the stories that I get are absolutely unbelievable. And some of them are so unbelievable that I don't even pass them on. But others, while they fall into the realm of the bizarre, there's some at least mythological support for them. I've had people tell me many times about time not seeming to run in its normal linear fashion. When I lived in California, I had people tell me that sometimes I would get on the 405 and they'd leave Orange County and be in LA much faster than they should have been able to. So certainly these things can possibly happen. There was a story brought to my attention. A lot of societies have legends about fairy rings. And whether you believe or not is irrelevant, but a lot of people make it a point not to enter a fairy ring. Well, there was a gentleman who unfortunately walked around the outside of a large fairy ring of mushrooms on a small island in the Pacific Northwest. Now, some of the legends coming from out of that area do deal with fairies. And there are a number of stories I've collected over the years about people who have... there was a story that was told to me by a gentleman when I was in England. I was collecting stories even then. And there were running electrical occurred in the areas of Ireland that had not had it before. And this was long before the days of burying electrical cables. So they were putting up huge poles to run these cables. And right outside this little community, the engineer said they needed to put a pole on this mound. And of course, you know, things like this certainly were exciting to the locals, who most of them didn't have TV. So they came and they watched. And one old lady told the engineer, "You can put that pole up all you want to, it's not going to stand." And he laughed at her. Though he was of Irish descent himself, he knew he was a good engineer when he erected a post, it was going to stay. And he pointed off in the distance at a long line of those poles standing straight and true as far as the eye could see. And she said, "Well, you can say what you want, but that is a fairy mound. And if you don't get their permission, it's not going to stand." And he laughed at her, and the pole was installed. And a few days later, when they were inspecting, all the poles were standing straight and true except that one. And it was bent as if it had been in a massive windstorm. So he reseated the pole. A few days later, they came back and checked, and it was bent off to the side again. And he figured the locals were having fun at his expense. So he went into the little community and he found that old lady and he said, "Who's been messing with my pole?" And she said, "I told you, if you erect it on a fairy mound without their permission, it's not going to stand." And when it happened a third time, he came back and said, "Okay, who do I have to talk to?" She said, "There's a gentleman here who can talk to the fairies." So she took him to see the gentleman, and the engineer explained what was going on, and he said, "Okay, come back in 2 days." When he came back in 2 days, he said, "Okay, I convinced them this needed to be done. They will allow you to put that pole, and it will not be out of line anymore." He said, "Okay." So they reseated the pole. He came back in a few days, and it was standing straight and tall. And he went to see the old man, and he said, "Now, exactly what happened?" He said, I went and talked to the fairies. I explained the necessity of doing this, and they understood." So, believe it or not, but sometimes legends have some validity. Now, there have been stories about those who get run afoul of fairy rings. You can be, you can have problems with just living after that. Now, the gentleman that did this said his, when he realized what he had done, he said he discovered his legs were numb. I mean, he didn't understand what was wrong. He was in good health. He said inexplicable things started to happen. Sounds became muffled. Like when you're in a dense fog. He said he got dizzy, got confused. It was a feeling of imbalance, of no longer being connected. So he went home and thought he might had an illness, and he went to bed. When he woke up a few hours later, he didn't even know where he was. He was in his own home, but nothing seemed natural. And the next day, he still felt a little odd, but life went on, and he forced himself to go to work with an old client. Came home that afternoon, and he was where his office was. He was almost end of his lease, and he knew there was a new industrial park being built near the town that he wanted to go check out. Maybe he wanted to move his business. So he pulled into the industrial part of supplies to see what looked like a modern, modest-sized, smoked glass and steel, government-style office building. Just been erected. There were still workmen on site, and there were a couple of specialty electrician panel trucks near the entrance. Well, he drove most of the way around the complex before he had to turn around, and he got out of his car and went up to a man who looked like he might be the project foreman. And he talked to him and asked if there were still suites available to rent. And he said he didn't know, and I was going to have to leave because he wasn't supposed to be there. Well, he didn't think much about it, got back in his car, and decided he'd turn later on when the park was open for business. A couple of weeks later, he came back, pulled into the park, and was absolutely flabbergasted. That smoked glass and steel office complex he'd visited just a few weeks before had vanished. In its place was a small building that had a fitness center and a few other small businesses. What he was seeing didn't add up. He was absolutely bewildered. So he told a friend of his about it, who was an investigative reporter. And he went to where this complex had been. He took his daughter with him, and he saw paramilitary soldiers on guard on either side of the access road. Well, when he came back, the soldiers he had very clearly seen had changed into black plastic wrapped objects. You know, several days later, the man telling the story said he walked by an empty dark storefront that housed the Sea Shepherd, a group that defends the oceans. And he said to himself, this is odd. He had gone by the day before and it was fully occupied. The lights were on. He mentioned to a friend of his later that Sea Shepherd had pulled a midnight move. And her husband had been one of the original Sea Shepherd captains, so she knew all about the recent doings of the organization, and she was absolutely positive they hadn't moved. So the next day he went back, and Sea Shepherd was open for business. They said they hadn't moved, hadn't gone anywhere. So a month went by, and he's walking by Sea Shepherd's storefront and looked over and saw it was empty. Just a month after he had seen it leave and it came back. And a week later, something terrible showed up on his property. It was a feral cat hunkered down in the grass. And he guarded the cat to make sure it safely got to the bushes. He said it was very aggressive and it wanted to fight him, even though he was only trying to help. He said he ran into his travel trailer and slammed the door, and the thing jumped on the roof so hard it rocked it. He said, you know, in the dark, the cat did resemble an owl, but it seemed at least two or three times the size of a great horned owl, which did live on the island. Well, the thing came back a couple of weeks later. And got another feral cat and killed it. The thing hid in the bushes and didn't really want a confrontation. Well, the only thing he could figure to let strangeness is he circled and crossed into a fairy ring. He said the mushrooms there were the size of dinner plates. And you do not enter a fairy ring. You just don't do it. He got dislocated in time and space, and that dislocation took about a month to wear off. Now, he'd apparently visited two alternate timelines, he thought, even snapping a picture of the abandoned Sea Shepherd storefront. Now, the island where he was at experienced an enormous level of development and investment from the federal government. Now, the town was small. They only had 2,200 people. But the port's in the process of being militarized and quietly rebuilt and fortified. The ferry landing was militarized with the latest hardware, including a DHS X-ray mobile scanner. Department of Homeland Security rented the largest office building in town, began rebuilding it into a garrison with bulletproof glass. And military hardware has been reported showing up on the island at night. A friend of his saw 14 black right armored vehicles driving in convoy from the ferry landing in the direction of the airport. And there's been some new massive hangars constructed, even though there's not enough commercial air travel to make it necessary. Well, you have to ask yourself, what happens when you do cross a ferry ring? Does belief or disbelief affect the outcome? Well, I've heard many, many stories in both directions. Well, there are another interesting location. In the Lake District in Cumbria, there have been some stories about some hillwalkers who spent the night at a nearby inn and later on found out they couldn't have because the inn was submerged by a reservoir back in the 1800s. I had a friend whose family went on vacation and we were talking about it and they said they had stopped at a restaurant, very nice, personable people, had the lunch, and coming back they tried to find the same restaurant and it was gone. Come to find out, the restaurant had been torn down many, many years before. Then there's a story about the two women who set out to walk a few miles one night to a nearby village, only to suddenly find themselves in an eerie, unfamiliar landscape. And it's hard to come up with a rational explanation when the experience is shared with someone else. Another gentleman said he was driving from Windermere to Coniston. And to get there, you have to turn at a very obvious junction. But the junction wasn't there. Now, the map made it clear there was a junction. So he thought maybe he had driven past it. Didn't find the junction, just had roads and fields. So he turned around and tried again. Eventually he pulled over. On that particular day, that junction did not exist. Situated off the south coast of England is the picturesque island of the Isle of Wight, W-I-G-H-T. That island is just 25 miles by 13 miles, home of rock festivals that once saw the likes of Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. It's the home of David Icke, who writes some very interesting books. It's got a reputation as being the most haunted island in the world. It's said to be because of the disproportionately high number of ley lines that cross the land. And when these lines cross and intersect, power points are said to create an energy vortex. There's stories of ghost sightings, time slips, and alternate dimensions. Tales from locales of seeing highwaymen being led to Hangman's Hill, and 19th century smugglers and pirates seen scaling cliffs in front of late night fishermen. Then there's people finding themselves on strange paths they've never seen before, despite having lived on the island all their lives. There's one story that's told to a local journalist by a couple who were staying on the island for a holiday. This was in 1999. It was a warm, sunny day, and the couple strolled down a country lane on their way to a park. and they noticed a large Victorian house surrounded by long lawns where a group of children were playing what looked to be football. They were standing in a ring, and on the floor was a pile of school bags and some old-fashioned hockey sticks. One of the boys was wearing antiquated breeches, and the girl beside him was in an old-fashioned gym slip. Another child, who a little chubby little boy, as he was described, was wearing a bright yellow shirt. The couple said they could hear a noise coming from the children, but they couldn't make out any words. And although the ball was being kicked, it didn't appear to go anywhere. It's like watching a video that constantly replayed itself. The couple said they never experienced anything quite like it. As they walked on down the lane, they saw two men with a very old-fashioned car, but they didn't respond when the couple said good morning. Well, they got to the park and spent a couple of hours enjoying themselves, and when they went past the old house again, they saw the children are still there. They hadn't moved at all. And the wife said to her husband, "Look how odd." And just as he turned to look, they vanished, like switching a TV set off. Well, they were so startled by the experience, they hurried away up the lane, and they just wanted to get away. They didn't know what they'd witnessed, whether it was a moment from the past or that actually momentarily stepped back in time. Whatever it was, they didn't want to do it again. Then there's the history of Duver Church on the eastern side of the island at St. Helens. It was here in the 14th century, a monk by the name of Imo defied excommunication, continuing to conduct devil worship. Satanic rites were performed on the altar with a coven of black witches in attendance. Now, the church was eventually left to fall into disrepair, and as it happened in many parts of the island, due to erosion, it gradually washed away into the sea. 1784, workmen from the mainland arrived to fortify what was left of the church steeple. As they were working, the foreman of the group was surprised to see an old man up in the tower. The foreman called his men over to come look. Astonished anybody would risk being up there, and the old man, though, was angry at the intrusion and cursed the workmen, telling them they would suffer the same fate as the previous laborers who'd come to do the job. Well, the workmen thought it was a joke, and when the time came for them to return to the mainland, they set sail for Portsmouth and vanished. There was no storm. What happened? Was the curse actually effective? Well, not only are ley lines thought to be the cause of ghostly apparitions and other paranormal incidents, but a resident of the island, David Dickey, claims because of the concentration of these powerful energy ley lines, the island is home to a determined presence of occultists who want to use these lines for their own agenda. And they can manipulate this energy field into a greater form of density. According to Ike, while we see everything as physical, the energy construct is the place where everything originates, and that's why the elite spend so much effort manipulating the energy. Because if you want to affect all the fish, you need to affect the energy sea in which we all live. Now, this repetition of ritual practice has over time left strong impressions, of course. Occultists work to keep the energy grid suppressed at these critical intersections by conducting rituals. Now, satanic rituals are performed on these lines. Islands are particularly powerful energetically because they're surrounded by water, which is an excellent conductor of energy. And arrangements are made for negative buildings to be deliberately sited on these places of power, such as nuclear energy stations and prisons, as well as satanic lodges. They somehow manipulate, negatively charge these energy flows. And he said, the world's ley lines have been used by secret societies for thousands of years. And he believes that they who harness this ancient power and are able to control humanity by manipulating this energy system to meet their own agendas. Now, there's a man named David Gowan, who is, his books are published by David Hatcher Childress, and he believes both white and black energy spirals emanate from the earth in certain places. And these can be naturally occurring or deliberately blackened energy made so by occultists. And he claims to have helped heal people suffering illnesses ranging from fatigue syndrome, heart problems, MS, epilepsy, and motor neuron disease by identifying black energy spirals close to where they live. It makes you wonder. You know, there are many who say that UFOs are found at intersections of ley lines. It's said to be a ley line triangle, with the corners being at Mount Scott by Crater Lake at the top of Mount Shasta at $8 Mountain in Oregon, all joining together. Many of the lines intersect each other, and the points at which they cross are often in the more inhabited wildernesses and mountain areas. So you have to ask yourself, what could happen at these spots? And Tesla said to find the secrets, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. Well, there are many, many bizarre stories that deal with these ley lines. There was a story I was told, because I'm working on a book on mysterious disappearances. When I was in at the Necronomicon, I was doing a talk, and a lady asked me what I knew about the national park disappearances. And I had heard about them, but I didn't know a great deal about them. I've done a lot of research. And it turns out it's unbelievable the number of disappearances that take place in national parks. Well, one story that I found involved a little 5-year-old boy who ran off to play in the woods with his two older cousins. The two cousins returned without the 5-year-old. They were made to take a lie detector test in an effort to find out what happened to their cousin. Of course, they were suspected of having done away with him, and they both passed the test. Nobody could understand what had happened or where the little boy could have gone. The two older boys told investigators their young cousin had been hungry and he wanted to go back, and even though the two boys knew they shouldn't let him go back on his own, they didn't stop him when he started to walk back to the campsite. That was the last time they saw him. When they later returned to their grandparents' home in Hampshire County, which was near Kirby. It was May 1st, 1994, in the remote, rugged, forested mountainside, but soon became dubbed the forest that swallowed the little boy. Now, Victor spent many days in the woods behind his grandparents' home. He loved the woods and knew that area well, and he'd previously run home once before to announce his cousin's hunting prowess after killing a rabbit. Well, his mother said he was so comfortable out in the wilderness, he preferred to run around and climb trees barefoot, even in cold seasons. Now, though the FBI soon became involved in the search, there was never any evidence of abduction. Criminal records were run on several of the family members and came up blank. Mother said, nothing makes sense. We've been through the mountain with a fine tooth comb, not a footprint, a hair, nothing has been found. And it rained. Over 500 people had voluntarily gone to the mountains to help search for him, along with heat-seeking helicopters that hovered over the more rugged parts of the mountain to try to find him if he'd fallen in a crevice. And the few ponds were explored inch by inch by divers. Local hunter Jay Pendell, who lived in one of the cabins on the mountain, was quoted in a local newspaper saying, "There's something phony here. If he was in the woods, I'd have found him." Toward the end of the month, TV coverage prompted a National Guard search for the little boy. And 4 months later, a Special Forces Reserve unit came, and a team of cadaver dogs came and searched the area. Still nothing. Only more questions. A canine bloodhound seemed to pick up a scent of him at the exit of the woodland that led to the road, but that wasn't thought to be reliable enough to go on. Hundreds of people had covered that particular area in the searches that had been conducted previously. And then there was that strange formation found in the woods. Three small rocks placed in the shape of a triangle with a piece of wood in the middle of it, and three links of wood on the sides of it. wrote another dead end. It was then dismissed from everybody's mind, but consider, if you will, the disappearance happened on May 1st. Now, if you have a suggestion or want to be involved in a discussion, I invite you to call 267-521-0159. Now, the night before May 1st is known as Beltane in the pagan calendar, or Walpurgis night in the Druidic calendar. But the day of his disappearance, May 1st, is also said by some believers to be one of the Illuminati's most sacred of days, and on this day, human sacrifice is said to be a requirement. It's also considered the founding day of the Illuminati, which was established May 1st, 1776 in Bavaria. So was the triangle formation a thaumaturgic triangle used in satanic summoning rituals? If it was, it had no protective circle surrounding it, which for those who believe it's possible to summon demons with this ritual would be highly dangerous to the practitioner, unless the wood placed around it was an attempt to create as close a circle as possible. The thaumaturgic triangle is used in ritual demonic summonings, with the triangle said to be for the demon in which the summoned entity or negative entity will manifest itself. Satanists are said to mark out a triangle area with symbols or charged items, which could be rocks or stones, and these symbols placed at the three points of the triangle. Now, this could be, and possibly is, wholly unrelated to the disappearance of the child, but looking further into the relevance of this day and supposed occult and Illuminati calendars, proponents of the ritual importance of these days have pointed out that it is one of the days a human sacrifice is needed. Indeed, the theory of special days goes a lot further, outlining the importance of the time period between April 19th and May 1st. Now, that is a critical 13-day period where 13 is the number of regeneration and sacrifices made to the beast or to the master. Time of blood sacrifice from ancient times said to be in worship of the demon Baal. Now, there have been wild but horrifying claims that have been made of children being bred for this purpose or being abducted to be sacrificed by the secret society. Claims which reach the highest levels of political and religious groups. Now, figures vary between 50 to 80,000 young people disappear each year in the United States. Now, could it really be true that children and adults are abducted for sacrificial satanic cults? Do they become victims of a powerful underground elite operating from the highest levels of government down? Is this in any way plausible or just a conspiracy theory? Now, I do want to point out that every year in this country alone, 200,000 to 300,000 people just go poof. Now, it's estimated 7 or 8 of them are wanting to disappear, dodging bill collectors, poor man's divorce. But 2 or 3 out of 10 walk out the door and don't get to the street. They have no idea what happens to them. Now, James Rothstein, a retired New York Police Department detective, wrote extensively of his investigations into human trafficking and child abductions, pointing to elite pedophile rings, shadowy groups, concealed, cloak, and hidden, held together by secret blood oaths. I can't talk. In just one very complex case, 12-year-old Johnny Ghosh was abducted by on his newspaper delivery around in Des Moines in September of 82. His mother claimed that an abduction ring, which is part of the earlier established MKUltra program, was behind it. She would testify in court of what she believed to be a nationwide satanic ring. And those who believe there's truth in the existence of satanic occult ritual worship also point to some important events in recent history as having occurred during this 13-day period, including April 19th was Waco, April 19th was Oklahoma bombing, April 20th, Virginia Tech massacre. Then there's the high school student in Germany who killed 18 on April 27, 2002, and killed himself at exactly 1,300 hours, which is with 13 allegedly flagging Illuminati power number, and conspiracists claiming that committing suicide to complete a mass killing is a hallmark of a mind control victim. Bill Cooper wrote about that in his book, Behold a Pale Horse. Now, counter to this argument, of course, is that there are many other dates on the calendar outside of this 13-day period where mass murders and abductions have also taken place. Going back to the disappearance of the 5-year-old, one local newspaper reported that a psychic by the name of Louis Gonat contacted the sheriff to say he kept having visions of the boy being taken to a shack in the woods and described natural features around the shack. The sheriff recognized that part of the woods exactly despite the fact the psychic was resident in another state hundreds of miles away and had never been to those woods before. Sheriff, though, was also inclined to believe the psychic due to the fact that he also once contacted a nearby sheriff 2 years earlier and precisely described where a man's body was in a creek in Marshall County. Well, he's absolutely correct that a man's body was found. He described that in his vision of the little boy, a man with a beard and long hair was involved and he'd been stalking the boy in the woods. He said, "There's only one vision I see every time. The boy's in a hole in the ground and there's still energy there." In other words, he was saying the boy wasn't dead, but was being held prisoner. The police kept missing something. Well, the sheriff went to the place described and the shack was there. But the boy wasn't found. Given that Gonat said he'd been in a shack and then in the ground, it would seem perhaps to imply he'd been moved and taken somewhere else where he was held captive in the ground. And given his accuracy in finding the other man, maybe this vision was correct. Could certainly abductors, experts in concealment and evasion, fit and elusive and with a strong motive exist and flourish in wilderness areas? Certainly that's a question you need to ask. And perhaps this next story is a good illustration of my point. In the 1930s, the bone-freezing winters and untamed wilds of the Northwest Territories of Canada were one of the most inhospitable places on the planet. No heating, no modern comforts, exposure in this terrain for anything other than a short time would have been clearly suicidal. Well, none of this deterred a man by the name of Albert Johnson, a man of infamy who led the Mounties on a ferocious hunt after shooting several of them. Now, moving alone in the territories, he took up residence in a bare log cabin and set traps to survive off the land. For both food and fur, he made a lonely but presumably chosen existence. The only people for miles around were the local Inuits, but he was interfering with their traps on which their livelihood depended, and they asked the police to come deal with him. The closest Mounties, almost 100 miles away, arrived in minus 50 degree cold. Johnson refused to open the cabin door, and when they kicked it down, he shot one of them. He drilled holes in his cabin, and from inside, he shot at them. Without gun by the trapper's firepower, not expecting him to be as heavily armed and on the offensive, they withdrew, but came back later with a larger posse of 10 men and a pack of dogs, explosive, and a whole lot of rifles. On their arrival, the trapper held them in a gunfight for more than 12 hours until the Mounties threw a stick of dynamite into the cabin in an attempt to smoke him out. But when they came in to arrest him, they surprised him by firing at him from a foxhole he'd dug in the floor of the cabin. What happened next was even more astonishing and unbelievable. In what seemed utterly impossible, this man led the police on a 7-week manhunt across the snow-covered wilderness that saw him climb a 7,000-foot peak with no climbing gear. At the top, he vanished once again. At one stage, he crossed a frozen river using the tracks of a caribou in order to conceal his own footprints. Well, by the end of the chase, having been pursued for more than 50 days by police, army, Indian trackers, dogs, and airplanes, he was finally cornered and shot. But only after he had covered nearly 90 miles in 72 hours. He never uttered a word in any of his encounters with the police, and he was almost like a ghost in his ability to elude and evade until the final confrontation took place when he'd run out of escape routes. So how did he survive and escape for weeks amid blizzards and whiteouts with no provisions except ammunition, climbing mountains and covering ground faster than the dogs? No one knew, but he had done it. Could the psychic who said he had visions of a man stalking and snatching the boy in the woods have been right? The story shows just how possible it is for a man with extraordinary guile, strength, and intention to exist as a shadowy, elusive figure in the unforgiving wilderness. living off the land and outsmarting fellow humans by the score. And one final reference to occult connections mentioned in the Shoemaker case, and that's the little boy. Many researchers run by a supposed fourth-generation escapee of the Illuminati speculate that in the well-known case of the missing baby girl, Lisa Irwin, she was abducted from her Kansas home in 2011 for the purpose of sacrifice on her, with her first birthday falling on 11-11-11. To some of these folks, numbers have an importance. Now, this particular person goes even further in making the astonished claim the child was smuggled out of the country and put in a boat organized by a trust run by the Luciferian Knights of Malta, claiming the trust itself traces underwater ley lines for the Illuminati Satanists. Again, another reference to the ley line connection. Now, on the one hand, if this is true, it raises a lot of interesting questions. Is it preposterous? Well, possibly. However, the connection to Malta is an interesting one because it leads to the apparent belief that in Malta, underground beings demand humans. And that's supported by the researcher and archaeologist Graham Stewart. There are many, many stories that absolutely boggle the mind, but many of them have turned out to be true. Now, Malta has long been an island of great strategic importance, was a stronghold of the British Navy during World War II. According to Stewart, mythological creatures do exist, and the governments have known. These creatures are fed humans. When ancient priests who worshiped Baal came to the island, they practiced the offering of humans to their god of the underworld, who they believed lived under the island. Well, what is true is that in 1902, laborers digging a well accidentally discovered a series of excavations that descended down into the multi-level catacombs beneath the surface of the island. The hypogeum of Hal Salvianti, as it's become known, had long subterranean passages that were said to travel underground for miles. When it was first discovered, it was said that human skeletons numbering at least 7,000 were found inside. Lois Jessop, a secretary at the British Embassy, reported an incident regarding the caves to Borderland Science Journal. On a trip to explore, I'm very curious and much against the advice of the official guide with her, she ventured into the small, less accessible burial chambers in the lowest level of the caves. As she entered on her hands and knees with a candle to light the way, she climbed through a small entry port and came into a passage that ended in an enormous cave where she stood on the edge of its ledge looking down at what looked to her like a bottomless pit. Opposite her, at a slightly lower level, she noticed a ledge like the one she was standing on. It looked as though it led to a tunnel. And as she stood there looking at it, she claims that one after the other, a group of very large creatures started to appear on that ledge. She said 20 people of giant stature walked along the ledge, their height about 20 feet. Long white hair that felt like a cowl, their heads oval and elongated. They walked slowly with long strides. Then they stopped, turned, and simultaneously raised their heads. They beckoned to her. She was terrified. As she fled in panic back through the tiny gap and back to find the guide, she said her panic didn't seem to shock him, almost as though the look he gave her was entirely knowing. She said at that point she knew he had seen what she had seen at one time. But he was also made her aware of the need for caution. As though warning her not to speak of what had happened for years, she didn't. Well, prior to this experience, she says a group of school children had gone to the caves on a tour with their teachers. And they too had come into this burial chamber. But as the last child had entered, the walls behind them had caved in and the teacher and the children were never seen again. She was puzzled that the walls just happened to cave in at that moment in time, trapping the children. She remembered when she'd been in there with the giant humanoids, a terrific wind had blown across at her as the group of creatures had raised their arms at her and her candle had been snuffed out. And she didn't think the walls collapsing had been a natural accident. She knew what had happened to her and could only wonder how she had been lucky enough to escape. Well, the editor of the journal, Crabb Riley, found her story hard to believe, especially because she couldn't provide evidence of the children disappearing. And he was declined to dismiss the whole thing as fantasy until he researched archives where a mention of the disappearances was found in a National Geographic magazine. Teachers and school children descended and didn't return. Search parties and excavations found no trace, and after weeks they were given up for dead, according to the story. Well, the article by archaeologist William Griffin also made mention of the skeletons found when the caves were first discovered, although the number is far higher than most realized. He said there were human bones to account for 30,000 people. He thought it was a restaurant for Atlantean descendants. Could underground races of carnivorous species really dwell in the deep substrata below ground, coming up momentarily to snatch and feed off humans? Interestingly, in some research, Dustin Naif said there are over 700 caves and tunnels in the Lava Bed National Park alone, and over 150 in the Marble Mountain area near Mount Shasta, with over 30 miles of tunnels mapped so far. In another part of the country, in the El Mapai National Park, underground disappearances are a common possibility. It was here that James Chapman's daughter was suggested they go to El Mapai's Badlands National Monument for a short walk to the Big Tubes attraction to celebrate his birthday. Leaving the car in the parking lot, a team of archaeologists saw them set out on the mile-long trail. It was June 2002. The attraction comprised nearly 20 miles of tunnels and larval tubes, but they only intended to take a look. They weren't wearing hiking boots and had no backpacks. This was just a gentle stroll along the path to the monument. Now, they were reported missing shortly after that. A rapid search and air rescue was instituted along with sniffer dogs, helicopters, and over 200 people. The search party covered a 35-mile area looking for them. The dogs thoroughly combed the area. Not a single trace of them could be found. That is, until 8 years later, when their skeletal remains, tattered clothes, ID, and bank cards were discovered. The family and the authorities simply could not understand what had happened to them on an innocent one-mile walk. And they particularly couldn't understand how they got to where they'd been found, over 4 miles away from the lava flows where their bones were scattered. Where they'd been found required extensive travel over rough and precarious larval troughs. Spokesman for the park said at the time of the search, if they were on the surface, they'd have been found. Helicopters had flown repeatedly over the area where they were later found. Yet air searches, dogs, and people hadn't seen a single trace of them. Crossing in lava is not a walk. It's rough, and a mile can take an hour. The searchers were perplexed. Helicopters had repeatedly flown over the lava. How could they not have been seen? If they weren't on the surface, where were they? Did they somehow go underground? Spelunker searched the caves, according to officials. We don't know how they got to where they were. Were they in the caves at some point? If they were, why would they go further away from safety when they resurfaced? Were they taken into the caves, into the labyrinth, where eyesight's handicapped by the darkness beneath? Was something human at play or something far less easy to define? And since then, 5 more people disappeared in the same place. Interestingly, in Socorro County's search and rescue reports, the organization also lists other inexplicable disappearances in the Mexico wilderness areas, including in 2001, the person walked away from camp during the night, presumed to be out of the area. Remains found by hikers 11 years later. March 2012, male runner from Wilderness Lodge Hot Springs then returned from run. After a 4-day search involving 16 teams and 5 aircraft, they found the runner dead. And the SAR Council of New Mexico relates a strange July 2009 case where they searched for an elk hunter in Pecos National Forest. Over 12 teams with dogs searched for the man reported missing by his friends. His vehicle was at the camp with all his clothing and gear inside, apart from his gun and hunting bow. Dogs tracked him along a trail and back to the vehicle, but Nowhere else. Eventually, they terminated the search. Didn't find him. What had managed to overpower an experienced hunter with a gun? Where did these and many other reported missing people disappear to before they were discovered dead or not discovered at all? Going back to the Malta Caves, the editor of Borderland Science took things further in the 1900s by using the experience of testimonies from others, both in regular positions in life and those involved in more esoteric and auric study, to become convinced in a theory that there may exist many races in the interior of the earth of different densities dependent on their planes of vibration. He said, I believe some of these underground races can shift between third and fourth dimensions so that sometimes they're visible to human sight and invisible at other times. And that's a fascinating theory, if true. Rowley's conclusion also came from studying, among other things, the works of Max Hendel's The Rosicrucian Cosmoconception, in which Hendel writes, the first step in occultism is to study the invisible worlds, non-existent and incomprehensible because of the lack of sight to perceive them. The mysterious force that causes phenomena remains invisible to us, but if with methods our higher senses are awakened, we're able to see these hidden worlds. And the reality of these higher worlds and the objects in them appear as mirages or even less substantial, but in truth, there is much more real and more indestructible than objects in the physical world. So are these creatures from the other worlds kidnapping people? There are many unusual creatures have been reported in literally every state in the Union. I've got a new book I'm working on. In fact, I'm finishing it up. Basically, right now it's tentatively titled Strange Creatures from Time and Space, because some of the creatures could not exist, and yet they do. There was a lady who's in an account of her experience to the Phantom Universe UK blogspot. She said it happened early in the morning around 7 a.m. April 2010. My husband and I were traveling from Breckenridge in Summit County, Colorado to Abilene. My husband was driving and I was just looking around, and when in the road ahead of us, she saw something. We were coming to a small inclined road. It was visibly very clear, and she saw something run across the road on top of the rise in front of us from left to right. There was something visible there above the road by a few inches. It looked like small feet and part of legs moving fast over the road in a trot. Couldn't see above mid-level except for a ripple sky behind the thing about the size of a person's body. She said it reminded her of the predator effect in the movie. Well, when they passed the spot, there was nothing there. She looked on both sides of the road, down into the ditches, but there was no animal, no nothing. But she got the feeling there was something watching them. She told her husband after she saw it cross, but he didn't notice it. For the rest of the trip, she kept looking to see if her eyes were playing tricks. Couldn't figure out what it was. The light, a cloaked entity, heat waves, but the morning was cool. It had been a cool evening. The heat hadn't risen yet. Sun was barely up. But when the thing crossed the road, she felt the presence. Now, there's the Bigfoot Field Reporter blog that also has interesting stories. Now, the person who is the moderator, while not necessarily believing in the possibility of invisible creatures, she got a report from a woman who described a puzzling incident at Salt Fork State Park in May of 2008. The person that submitted it said, I'm still mystified. Something crossed the trail in front of me. It was big, but I couldn't see. Just a glimmer and a transparent outline, but it seemed upright, about 20 yards away. For years, I was too uneasy to tell anybody. I didn't have the words to describe it, but was it a Bigfoot in a non-physical sense? Another way to describe it. Then I heard a radio talk show. A caller who was a Marine related to some exact thing happening. He compared it to the Predator film with the alien-type creature seen only as a shimmering outline. That's exactly what she saw, and to this day, she's still terrified of it. She even thinks that whatever it was could still be following her somehow. She said recently a collection of twigs and leaves was left on her deck chair within a space of a couple of hours, and that isn't the first time it's happened. Well, the moderator of the blog had a different but very strange experience while out for a jog with her husband one summer at Hogback Ridge in Boulder, Colorado. They'd already looped the trail once, and he'd left her behind, being a faster runner when she needed to use the restroom near the parking area. On leaving the restroom, she caught sight of her husband out of the corner of her eye, go past the side of their parked car, and ducked down behind it about 80 feet away. She thought he was planning on playing a trick on her and was going to jump out at her to scare her. When she jogged toward the car to tell him it was too late, she'd already seen him, but when she got to the car, there was no one there. And she looked all around the car and in the trees behind it, still didn't find anybody. At this point that the husband arrived from the other side of the parking lot running out of the woods. She had to presume it was just her seeing things, but it was her husband, somebody she would have reason to know. And then there's another account that came from a MUFON. The reporter said, I was hunting in Wilson, North Carolina, November 2009, about 6 a.m. Burst of wind hit him, but it was strange. This wind was blowing in a circular fashion. It was making a humming sound, a bit like a high-powered electric motor. He would have thought it was a natural thing, but if it hadn't been for the humming, it had to be blowing 40 miles an hour, but in a circular pattern. He said he knew this because he could see the tops of the trees bending in a circular way. This noise stayed over his head for about 2 minutes before moving. And as it moved away, he watched the trees blowing in a circular pattern again. He said his feelings at the time was one of terror. He's armed with a rifle, but he was terrified. Something flew over his head he couldn't see. Of that he was certain. Then there's the account from the Muskegon Council, Chronicle of May 21st, 1998, in Manistee National Forest. School children and accompanying teachers are witness to a large silent object described as shaped like a protozoa or an amoeba that appeared to float slowly over the tree line above them. The body of the object was described as like a shimmering gossamer, an almost transparent or insubstantial, but it was also seen to be illuminated by lights. With the exception of the lights, this last account is reminiscent of Navy veteran Trevor Constable's 20-year study of atmospheric beings, his theory of sky-bound entities that roam the skies in silence, visible only by the use of infrared, but always there. Organic creatures of some sort, large, voracious, but invisible to the naked eye, these undetectable predators could take people without them seeing them. And a number of pilots have reported very similar things, though they've learned not to report them to their airlines. Well, we've come to the end of another show. Until tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Mountain, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.